Rick had some really good words to say at the table this morning from Genesis chapter 28, and that's where we're going to go tonight. It was part of our reading here just this week, and maybe expand on just the storyline a little bit more, which may give us a little more insight in some things that are going on. If we back up just a little bit, just in the storyline, nothing new, nothing unfamiliar here. But we know about Abraham's faith in God was something that was without question. We just see his devotion demonstrated time and again by his obedience. Abraham is often referred to as the father of the children of Israel. In fact, Israel was very proud of their lineage through Abraham. And the Bible story follows the lineage of Abraham and through Isaac and Jacob and Abraham's family. Well, Isaac married Rebekah at the age of 40, Genesis chapter 25. And after Isaac's prayers for his barren wife, Rebekah became pregnant with twin boys. And the children struggled together within her, the text says. And it's an interesting taste and a foretaste of what the future would be, that the children would struggle together for many years to come. Their struggling together began in the womb and it continued long after birth. Esau was the firstborn, but Jacob followed soon after, clutching the heel of his brother, his older brother, an action that prompted him to be called Jacob, a name literally meaning one who takes the heel. And so his name carries with it the idea of supplanting or deception, which, as we see in the life of Jacob, becomes a fitting name for him. Well, the brothers suffered because of the parents' favoritism. Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. And this favoritism would later become a problem for Jacob regarding his own children because of his own favorite son, Joseph, who was mistreated by his brothers. It's a lesson. It's a lesson for us, a reminder to those who are parents and grandparents to be careful not to provoke or to frustrate children by such favoritism. It doesn't lead to anything good. It just can't. Well, as the boys grew older, Esau and Jacob clashed over Esau's birthright and Jacob's efforts to obtain it. Esau sold his birthright to his younger brother in exchange for a bowl of beans. And the text of Genesis says he despised his birthright in Genesis 25. And years later, Jacob would displace Esau again by deceiving his father Isaac and gaining Esau's blessing as the firstborn. Their parents' favoritism once again rears its ugly head as Rebekah, who loved Jacob more than Esau, assisted her son's deceitful plot. Isaac's eyes had grown dim and had deteriorated to the point that he could not completely distinguish between his sons. We just read about that. And having disguised himself as Esau, Jacob deceived his father into giving him the blessing of the firstborn instead of giving that to Esau. And so, having been unseated by his brother two times, Esau hated his brother Jacob, and he intended to kill him. And that leads us into the story, really, that we're thinking about tonight. That's why Jacob earned the reputation of, as some have called him, Jacob the deceiver. So there comes into the life of Jacob a life-changing experience, perhaps a turning point in his life, in Genesis chapter 28. And this comes after he has done these deceptive things, after he had got the birthright from his brother and had deceived his father in these things. And if that's all we knew of Jacob, and if that's the way his life continued to be, I would think that our thoughts about him would be less than pleasant. We would not hold him high in regard because of the way he's conducted his life. And even as Rick said this morning, up to this point, you know, I would struggle to be able to see some indication where Jacob had a fear and a concern about Jehovah God. He has some interests and he has some concerns, but they sure seem to be deep-seated, seem to be inward. He's concerned about his well-being and how things turn out for him. But I'm not seeing where the regard goes any farther than that. But there's a change coming. Now, there's an event that takes place here that is incredible, that is substantial. And we read about it in chapter 28 of Genesis. We begin at verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. And when he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to the heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early in the morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called the place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I may return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. A life-changing experience. It was at his mother's urging that Jacob fled for his life to Haran and to Rebekah's brother, to Laban. But it's on his way to Haran that this experience takes place, something that would change him dramatically. Now, I wonder if we can relate to that. I mean, I've not had a dream or a vision where I see a ladder reaching into heaven, but I can think of events in my life that changed me, that helped me turn a direction. And we probably all have some kind of significant emotional event that has taken place that got our attention. And I think that's what happened to Jacob. It was not an experience that he was easily to forget. It was something that moved him. It was something that changed the way he looked at life. Alone that late in the evening, outside of a place called Luz, he found that stone that he used for a pillow. It was a secluded place. And in his sleep, he had that life-changing dream. And you have to just stop for a minute and try to picture that. It's a picture that does not come easy to my mind because it's just so far out. But it's what Scripture tells us about. And it does give us a glimpse of heaven and God on the other side. God spoke to Jacob and repeated to him the promises that he had made to Abraham and Isaac. Those same promises are given again, you know, the land promise, a great nation, a seed promised, through you all nations will be blessed, is what he said to Jacob and had said to his father before him and his father before him. And surely, I think, Jacob must have known something about those promises. Surely he had heard of these promises through his father, you know, before. And here God told Jacob that he will channel these great blessings through him. Now, if that wouldn't get your attention, I'm not sure what would. And it must have been a great encouragement at a time where Jacob was facing some great discouragements in his life. Discouragements, I have to say, of his own doing. But it was a time where he's running from being killed by his brother. And this event takes place. Jacob was away from home. He was in a strange land. He was fleeing the wrath of his brother. But he cannot flee beyond the watchful eye of God. That just seems to be an interesting point to me. That God still sees and knows what's going on, and God has already got a plan. This dream startled Jacob, and he awoke from his sleep. And he spoke and he acted in a very respectful and a reverent way in response to his dream. Verse 16 again. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." "How awesome is this place," he said. And the part when he says, "Surely God is in this place and I was not aware of it." I'm not sure that Jacob at any other part in his life had fully come to the understanding that God was in that place. But this has got his attention. And that is, God has got his attention now. And this is the gate of heaven. The gate as in an entrance way. Jacob had a glimpse of the presence of God, the house of God. And he took that stone and he slept on it that he had slept on, and he made it into a monument, poured oil on it like as if to anoint it, and changed the name of the place to Bethel. Bethel means house of God. And so after the dream, Jacob's focus changes. There is a new attitude that is seen. And Jacob makes a vow to God. You know, at first glance, when I read through this, it's almost like he's trying to bargain with God. I don't know, as I've read it over, I'm not sure that it's as much bargaining with God as if it's, you know, he's seeing this, there's a change that has taken place in his life, and he's identifying the change that has happened. And he requests three things here. Three things that he says. He says these things of God. He says, he makes mention of God's presence. He identifies God's presence. If God will be with me. I don't know that that's so much like a question as it is more of a statement. If God will be with me. There's something different we can accomplish when God is with us than when we are separated from God. He identifies God's presence. He identifies God's provision. If God is with me. If God gives me bread and clothing and God's protection so that I come back to my father's house in peace. It's as though Jacob is seeking, he is looking for God's blessing. And we would all do well to do the same thing. That if we would all in a very serious way. Seek God's presence. Seek His provision. Seek God's protection. Realizing that we need those things. See, again, in what we know and read of Jacob up to this point, I don't know that he's thought seriously about these things. And that he had realized before, really and truly, how much he needed these things from God. But he's had an eye-opening experience. And in response to that, he vowed three things. His devotion to God. The Lord shall be my God. God may have been thought of and spoken of previously as the God of his father or the God of Abraham. Now Jacob is looking at it from the standpoint of God being his God. The dedication of Bethel to God, this stone shall be God's house. And giving a tenth of all to God, I will surely give a tenth to you. Maybe these things help us to see and to highlight now that Jacob has got a greater focus on God. And the change in his attitude becomes evident. Instead of viewing Jacob's words as bargaining, maybe we might see it more of a request to God. Here are some things he's asking of God. The experience he has just had maybe has put some things in perspective. Sometimes we've seen that happen with people we know, or maybe it's happened to ourselves. We've had a real health scare. Maybe something has happened. We came close to a horrible accident. We saw our life flash before us, so to speak. And it's helped us to reevaluate where we are and who we are and understand that this life comes to an end. Sometimes we all need something like that to help us get our focus right. Jacob's focus has changed. And he realizes that God is offering to bless him in spite of his character flaws. And Jacob realized that he truly needed God's assistance in life, and he asked God for his guidance and for his provisions. So Jacob's latter scene is a powerful picture. It's a view into heaven, so to speak, and God's presence. And God's relationship with man. You think about what Jesus said to Nathanael. Rick made a reference to this morning. I think this is an interesting connection that is being made. When Jesus, in the very early part of his ministry, when he was still collecting some of those who would be his closest disciples and his apostles, and in reference here to with Jesus speaking to Nathanael, he said to him in John chapter 1, verse 51, "Most assuredly, I say to you, hereafter you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." The presence of God standing right before Philip and Nathanael. And Jesus is saying to them, "You will see this." And surely this would have come to Nathanael's mind, this story about Jacob and the stairway or the ladder to heaven, Jacob's dream, a ladder leading up to the feet of God. And I wonder if the implication of Jesus' statement is that he is the ladder that leads to heaven. If there's a connection that we can make there, that he is the ladder that was foreshadowed in that dream. Because Jesus, of course, came and then went back to heaven for the purpose of making a way, providing a means for us one day. Remember what Jesus said in John chapter 14. "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me." He is that ladder. He is that means to heaven. The Apostle Paul said that Jesus was the mediator that stands between God and man. He's that ladder between here, between earth and heaven. And you think about the scene of the ascension of Christ into heaven in Acts chapter 1. That comes to mind too with the idea of what Jacob saw in his dream and what he told Philip and Nathanael. And when he had spoken these things to his disciples, and while they watched, he was taken up in a cloud. A cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven, as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel. And they said, "Men of Galilee, why do you stand gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus who was taken up from you into heaven will come in like manner as you have seen him go into heaven. And the day will come that we shall meet him in the air, meet him in the clouds, in our way to heaven." I don't know, that's some thoughts that came to my mind when I thought about Jacob's dream and some of the implications of that. And one of the points, again, that we mentioned that just stands out, that in spite of Jacob's character flaws, God could see something more in Jacob. And God used Jacob to be the conduit of continuing his plan and delivering his promises to the world. Just some thoughts from Genesis 28, Jacob's dream. Maybe some things that we can learn from that and take with us. I hope that's helpful. The song we're about to sing is intended to be an encouragement for any who might need to respond to the gospel. If that is you in any way, we hope you won't delay, but that you'll come as we stand and sing.